Good morning, everybody. I'd like to start out by saying that, unfortunately, I don't have any props today. I don't have any treats, but what I do have is a tie that is nowhere close to matching my shirt. And for the sake of this talk, we can say that this tie is the world, and I will show you how I will separate myself from it as soon as I'm done. But on a serious note, I really want to thank Mike and Karen and all those that put forth effort for this gathering. It seems like it gets bigger and bigger every year, and it's truly is a blessing. Appreciate everybody's effort getting here and all the effort putting it on. We have a very important topic at hand for this talk, and it cannot be given at a better time of the year. As the world is at rest from frantically buying that perfect gift that their loved ones could not live without, we are at a gathering spending time with one another. The gift of the truth and being around the truth is so much more precious than anything that you can buy. It truly is the pearl of great price. As you and even your parents and even your grandparents have made the effort to attend this gathering, you know this. That each time we see each other, our bond with one another grows. And this is what is so special about being at these gatherings. It's a time away from the hustle and bustle of our busy lives as we live in the world, striving to not be of the world. And we want to look at that today. The world has and will continue to change before Christ returns. But one thing that will not change that we need to look at today is that the same lies that the serpent told Eve in the beginning of our Bibles is still being told today. The lie that God does not mean what he says. The lie that sin does not lead to death. The lie that we might ever gain enough knowledge to be equal to God. These lies are still alive today. We live in a society that thinks that it does not need God, that focuses on a God that wants them to be happy, and that they get to define what happiness is. This pull of the world that entices us all is getting stronger and stronger because the world is getting further and further away from God and will continue to until Christ returns to set up the kingdom. We see the strong pull of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life throughout the scripture. It's the same from man's fall in the book of Genesis at the beginning of our Bibles, and it's stayed relevant throughout history. So why do we think that the pull of the world is getting stronger and stronger? There are a few reasons, but I feel like the strongest one is a reliance on technology and a lack of faith in the Father. Technology by itself is not bad. It's a tool that has many positives. We use technology every day, and our lives are a lot easier and more efficient. It takes a lot less time to do things, which should leave a truckload of time for us to focus on the truth. Technology has made it easier and easier to study the truth, increasing our access. Technology has made it easier and easier to stay in communication and fellowship with others in the truth. Technology has made it easier to proclaim the truth, as it has increased the size of the audience. So there are numerous things to be thankful for in regards to technology. But the overwhelmingly negative that we find with technology is the emphasis on self that it creates, that it almost demands. Society is too concerned with themselves. This is the danger that the younger generations like yours face. Social media has ignited a total change in how we communicate. It has allowed us to build a representation of ourselves for others to see and to try to connect with. This representation is more times than not a representation that's not 100% accurate. This is because people care about what others think about themselves. There have been studies that show that the more people use Facebook, the worse they feel. Because people see others brag about their perfect life and are jealous, or they do not get the feedback that they wanted as they talked about their perfect life on Facebook. The researchers have even gone as far as creating a theory called FOMO, so the acronym FOMO, which stands for fear of missing out. Users have this fear of missing out as they see their friends bragging about sitting on the beach or being at a fun party, and they are sitting in front of a computer. It isn't real. Words are used to manipulate others' thoughts. Shrewd words similar to the words used in the beginning of the Bible by the serpent. It creates discontentment. Hebrews 13:5 says, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. For he has said, I will never leave thee, nor forsake thee." Another aspect of technology that has changed the society that we live in is our mobile devices. Our mobile devices have made our lives much more efficient. Our smartphones have become Swiss Army knife-like appliances that include a dictionary, a calculator, web browser, email, Game Boy, appointment calendar, voice recorder, guitar tuner, weather forecaster, GPS, texter, tweeter, Facebook updater, and flashlight. They are more powerful and do more things than the most advanced computer at IBM corporate headquarters 30 years ago. One would think that this device that has single-handedly changed society should have freed up so much time in our day that there would be ample free time that we should get done what we needed to on our phones and then just set them aside until tomorrow. But the problem is that the more we do on our mobile devices, the more we want to do. Cell phone addiction is a clinically proven addiction that's very real. In fact, there's a phobia that's called nomophobia, and it's a fear of being without one's device. And they're not alone in their concern. A study out of Baylor University found that female college students spend an average of 10 hours a day interacting with their cell phones, mainly surfing the internet and sending 100-plus texts a day. That's also far more time than the reported spending with friends. Even more startling is 60% of people surveyed confess to feeling addicted to their devices. These devices are consuming our time. But there have been other things throughout history that has taken the place of mobile devices and consuming our time, such as TVs. So why are we focused on what consumes our time? Why talk about the negatives of Facebook and mobile devices? I mean, we did mention that they have positives. Because that is the root of the subject at hand. The world is anything that takes us away from focusing on the truth. Teens today in the world are spending too much time on media. Do you know that the average teen uses media 9 hours a day for their enjoyment? 9 hours a day. That's a huge number. And let's put that into context here. 9 hours is more than they sleep, more time than they spend with their parents and loved ones, and the 9 hours does not even include using media to do anything productive like schoolwork. Even if our youth and the truth are not in these stats, they are no doubt affected by these facts. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. We cannot say that we do not love the world if we are spending 9 hours a day on it, right? 1 John 2:16, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world." Deuteronomy 4:24, "For the Lord thy God is a consuming fire, even a jealous God. Anything that consumes our time makes God jealous." Matthew 6:24, "No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." So we have the subject at hand, living in the world, but not being of the world. And the question arises, how do we live in the world, but still strive to serve God and seek his kingdom first? It really comes down to a three-step process, I think. Step one, realize the world's pull and focus on defining it daily. Realize the world's pull and focus on defining it daily. Step two, realize that the truth and the world are polar opposites. Realize that the truth and the world are polar opposites. Step three, surround yourself with the truth. More equals more and less equals less. So we have surround yourself with the truth. More equals more and less equals less. Step one, realize the world's influence. We have to realize that naturally, this flesh that we are made of represents sin and a separation from the Father. Paul says in Romans, "For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. For the will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good, I find not." That the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, these lusts, when they are acted upon, bringeth forth sin. James 1:15, "Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death." We have to constantly be on our guard and focus on the evil that the world represents so we are not consumed with it. Step two, we have to realize that the truth and the world are totally opposite, that they cannot be mingled. There's an analogy that's fitting here. When you pour clean water into a bucket of dirty water, you're left with dirty water. This is the same thing as mixing truth and error. James 4, verse 4 says, "Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God." Step three, the way we overcome the world is by focusing and being around the truth. The more we study, the more we will know how we should act and obey and stay separate. We ask ourselves, if Christ returned at this very moment, would he find me doing something towards or against his will? The answer to that question is a process of study. The more we study, the more we will be able to answer that question. We must make the truth our addiction. And the only way to do this is effort. Going to gatherings like this, encouraging your parents to read with you, reaching out to the elders for answers to questions that you have, fostering friendships with kids in the truth. This three-step process is something that we need to do every day, not just occasionally, but constantly. Young people, you are in a different situation than your parents or other grown-ups are in. You do not get to choose the environment that you're in most times. Your parents choose that for you. What you have to realize is that the things you say and the things you do build a platform that's being watched by your peers. You will be different and it will be tough. You have to know the love that you have from all of us, from your parents, from your grandparents, and everyone in your ecclesias, and the truth as a whole. As a body, we have to know the struggles that our youth go through and be good representatives to them. There was a woman that was speeding and driving erratically. She was late taking her kids to soccer practice. All of a sudden, she saw blinking lights in her rearview mirror. She realized that she was being pulled over. As Officer Barney got to the window, he said, "I'm sorry, ma'am. I saw your church's bumper sticker, and I saw that the way you were driving and waving your hands and the certain hand signals that you were using, and we just knew that this car was stolen." The example is that when we profess our beliefs, we live in a glass house. Have you ever heard of guilt by association? Guilt by association is when someone is falsely accused of doing something wrong because of their association with the guilty party. There are countless cases in the news about people that are arrested and accused of doing things that they didn't do because of their associations. There's a great fear of being ridiculed for a negative association or something that isn't popular. We know that the truth is not popular amongst the world. It cannot be by design. From the beginning of the world, this was the case. We all, not just the youth, need to know and focus on this. Our comfort is that when we are shunned or perceived negatively by society, that we turn to our ecclesias and not to the world. No matter what you've done in the past, you can always turn to the brothers and sisters in your ecclesia, and they will be the comfort that you need. Do you remember the story of Peter denying Christ? Peter was accused of association with Christ, and he denied it three times because he was afraid of what would happen to him. And we all have been there. When we profess Christ, the world that is against Christ wants to ridicule us. Peter knew the mistake that he had made, and he wept bitterly. We have to realize that our comfort, what we confide and strength in, is the truth. We will fail, just as Peter failed. But we all need to open our arms up to our youth and realize that they didn't pick the environment that they're in most times. So we see guilt by association. We all have to be worried about being guilty by association with the world and relinquish being guilty by association with the truth. The truth will set us all free from these bodies of flesh and are drawn to the that are drawn to the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Young people, I want you to know how much of a blessing it is for y'all to grow up in the truth or to be around the truth at such a young age. Your peers in the world confide and take hope in the things that are just temporary and not real. This time of the year that is the epitome of materialism, where the world is focused on all its goods, we find ourselves together at this gathering. Let us all take comfort in this. The only true, lasting comfort that exists, walking hand in hand towards the kingdom soon to be established on this earth. Let's have our own FOMO, or fear of missing out of the truth. Let's seek earnestly to be around one another as much as we can. Let's try to read and study as much as we can so we will all know how our Father in heaven would have us to walk. In this world that's all about self-preservation and look at me and what I'm doing today, let's let Christ be our example. Christ was all about his Father's business all the time. He was as selfless as anyone can be. Let's pay attention and try to imitate his actions and the life he led that we read about every day in our readings. Because when Christ returns, will he find us doing his Father's will? Or will we be playing Xbox and tweeting about how awesome we are online? Thank you.